Good evening and welcome to the local news. Today is Monday, August 18th, and I'm Nat Cardos reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, small aircraft crash in Shelter Cove leaves one dead. North Coast Partnership seeks to fund Bold Ventures. So stay tuned, those stories and more coming up.
Redwood Community Radio acknowledges that its transmitter sites are located on the unceded territory of the Tsingkiyon, Wailaki, Wiyot, Wilcut, and Kato people. We honor ancestors past, present, and emerging, and acknowledge the ongoing cultural, spiritual, and physical connection these tribes have to this region.
On August 17th at approximately 3:21 p.m., Humboldt County Sheriff's deputies responded to a report of a small aircraft crash near Mount Coombs Park in Shelter Cove. The aircraft reportedly went down about 100 yards offshore. Emergency responders, including Shelter Cove Fire, CAL FIRE, and the U.S. Coast Guard, were also dispatched to the scene. Shelter Cove Fire personnel were the first to arrive and located two adult male occupants in the water. Both exited the aircraft prior to the rescue. KMUD News spoke with Cheryl Anthony, the Shelter Cove Fire Public Information Officer, for more information on the incident.
Well, yesterday, Shelter Cove Fire was paged out around 3:30 in the afternoon for an aircraft in the water. Apparently, two patients or people in the plane. And there were people down on Lower Pacific who were pointing out toward the ocean. They were up on a deck and looking with binoculars, and apparently some of them had seen it go down, but it was getting really, really densely foggy, and the waves or the swells were high, so it was hard to see anything. And so the Shelter Cove Fire Department Ocean Rescue Team got ready and launched at the marina and came around to that area, which was off of Lower Pacific. And they started looking in this fog and with the big swells, looking and looking and looking. And eventually they found the people, and we heard them say, "We couldn't see them at all. We were on shore, and we could not see them at all because of the dense fog." They said they were on their way back to the marina, so we took our ambulance and met them at the marina.
One victim was stabilized at the scene and was transported by air to an out-of-area hospital with only minor injuries. The second victim was pronounced deceased at the scene and was released to the Humboldt County Coroner's Office. KMUD News spoke with Lieutenant Jesse Taylor of Humboldt County Sheriff's Office for more information.
Yeah, yesterday, August 17th, at about 3:21 in the afternoon, sheriff's deputies were dispatched to the area of the Shelter Cove Airport regarding what was reported as a small aircraft accident. According to some of the witnesses, an aircraft had crashed offshore about 100 yards. And so that prompted Shelter Cove Fire, CAL FIRE, U.S. Coast Guard, as well as the Sheriff's Office to be dispatched. Upon arrival, two subjects were rescued from the water. Unfortunately, one had been declared deceased on scene. Shelter Cove Fire, it's my understanding, had rescue swimmers via small craft in the water pretty quickly. And it's also my understanding this aircraft originally had departed from Santa Rosa to Shelter Cove and then was presumably en route back to Santa Rosa when the accident occurred. The Sheriff's Office is working with NTSB and FAA regarding the investigation, and at this time the identity of the decedent is being withheld.
The Humboldt County Sheriff's Office is currently working with the National Transportation Safety Board, NTSB, and the Federal Aviation Administration, FAA, to investigate the incident as the cause of the crash remains under investigation. Anyone with information related to the case is encouraged to call the Humboldt County Sheriff's Office at 707-445-7251. A competitive funding opportunity is opening for Humboldt area entrepreneurs, Daniel Mintz reports.
A partnership including Cal Poly Humboldt, College of the Redwoods, and the region's Small Business Development Center, or SBDC, aims to award a total of $200,000 to entrepreneurs on quests to start new businesses. Described on its website as an innovation hub, the Startup Humboldt Partnership already offers low-cost meeting and office spaces at its headquarters at 876 7th Street in Arcata, and its next step is to help entrepreneurs, quote, turn ideas into thriving ventures. Detailed during the August 13th online meeting of the Community Economic Resilience Consortium, the funding is competitive and will be awarded through a process that includes an ideation workshop and an entrepreneur talk session. Will Franklin of North Coast SBDC said the partnership is in serious fundraising mode to provide the seed money and support that will grow the region's future cornerstone businesses.
This whole group now, this initiative, is all designed to, we really want to find the next Natural Decadence or Yakima or Wing Inflatable, right? We want to find and scale businesses rooted in Humboldt, rooted in neighboring areas, and we want them to stay here and we want to help them scale. So this competition is the centerpiece of that.
SBDC's Samantha Edwards said the competition seeks to inspire bold ventures and provide the education, capital, and community needed to help them thrive. She described how lack of that has economic impacts.
We are addressing the root cause of talent loss. So there's limited access to capital here in Humboldt, and it's a major driver of talent flight, especially having the first polytechnic university in Northern California. We are getting an influx of the next generation of innovators. They are getting their degrees here, and then sadly, many of them are leaving the region in search of better funded opportunities elsewhere. And when they leave, they're taking their ideas, their energy, and their economic potential with them. So this is a pattern of disinvestment, and it becomes self-reinforcing. But with the right strategic interventions, we can reverse that trend and keep some of those innovators here. We can change this trajectory. So a catalyst for change being the Startup Humboldt Business Competition. It's a high impact regional initiative designed to support the growth of scalable businesses, create new jobs, and build a stronger local economy here in Humboldt.
There have been similar business award competitions in the past, but Edwards said Startup Humboldt strives to be more transformational.
We're raising the bar from previous competitions. I know that there have been some in the past, but with this one, bigger awards, bigger support systems, and a focus on truly scalable businesses. We're not just about the giant checks at the end, the big checks. We're about stimulating real change. So again, there's that access to that $200,000 in milestone-based funding. So winners will really have to prove their progress. At the end of the competition, funding will be unlocked in stages as they hit measurable milestones during a 120-day mandatory incubation period. And this ensures accountability and impact. Winners unfortunately for them, they can't take their giant checks and go to Tahiti. They must, you know, follow through with some of these milestones that have been predetermined by the advisors and the education team and perhaps the judges. So there's expert mentorship, skill building workshops, of course, networking and community. And then with the Lost Coast Ventures being involved, there's further opportunities for long-term support.
While Startup envisions seeding multi-million dollar businesses, there will be one micro-venture funding award. The funding program launches in mid-September with a Learn How to Enter kickoff party. Monthly workshops, talks, feedback sessions, and a final award ceremony in April of 2026 will follow, all at Startup's Arcata headquarters. More information on the competition is available online at startuphumboldt.org/the competition. For KMUD News, this is Daniel Metz.
In state news, Newsom announces November 4th special election to temporarily redraw congressional districts in response to Texas redistricting. KPFA's Christopher Martinez reports.
It's official. Governor Gavin Newsom is calling a special election in November to redraw California's congressional maps in response to the Texas redistricting plan. He announced his plan at a news conference in Los Angeles.
Today is Liberation Day in the state of California, and as Senator Schiff said...
Newsom says California is committed to independent redistricting, but given current events, he wants new congressional maps for the upcoming elections until after the 2030 census, when redistricting normally happens. But Newsom says Trump's call for Texas to redraw its maps made a temporary change necessary.
But we cannot unilaterally disarm. We can't stand back and watch this democracy disappear. We can't stand back and watch this democracy disappear district by district all across this country, not just in Texas, but in Missouri, where J.D. Vance went just a week ago, in Indiana, in places like Ohio, in places like Florida. We need to stand up, not just California. Other blue states need to stand up.
Some good government groups oppose changing California's redistricting process, which took the power from the state legislature and created an independent redistricting commission in 2008. But the group Common Cause has taken a more nuanced position. It says it still opposes partisan gerrymandering, but it also says a blanket condemnation in this moment would amount to a call for unilateral political disarmament in the face of authoritarian efforts. Sarah Sadwani is a member of California's Independent Redistricting Commission, and she too supports Newsom's move.
But I do so with the expectation that this is a one-time occurrence, that this does not subvert the will of the people of California. And I call upon these many leaders who have joined here today to be bold, to fight for American democracy, to not just pass maps for 2026, but to fight for independent redistricting in all 50 states so that we can level the playing field of a representative democracy.
Newsom's news conference also featured California's two senators, other elected officials, leaders from unions, and Planned Parenthood. Outside the Los Angeles event, immigration agents showed up, making at least one arrest. State Senator Scott Wiener of San Francisco issued a statement saying Trump's Border Patrol thugs showed up with ski masks. This situation, California leaders rallying for democracy, and Trump's secret police showing up to intimidate people, encapsulates exactly where our country is right now. Los Angeles Mayor Karen Bass says the immigration action was no coincidence.
This was widely publicized that the governor and many of our other elected officials were having a press conference here to talk about redistricting, and they decided they were going to come and thumb their nose in front of the governor's face. Why would you do that? That is unbelievably disrespectful. It's a provocative act. They're talking about disorder in Los Angeles, and they are the source of the disorder in Los Angeles right now.
Newsom's plan is for state lawmakers to act sometime in the next week to declare a special election in November. But Newsom may have some work ahead. A recent poll shows broad support for California's Independent Redistricting Commission, but Newsom says a temporary change for the 2026, 2028, and 2030 elections is needed to meet the times.
On November 4th in California, you have the power to stand up to Trump. You have the power to declare that you support a system that is not rigged. You have the power on November 4th to stand up for people that are being bullied. You have the power to stand up for people that are being intimidated. You have the power to stand up to the rule of law. We're giving the people of this state the power to save democracy, not just in California, but all across the United States of America. I hope we are waking up to this reality.
Reporting for Pacifica Radio News KPFA, I'm Christopher Martinez.
Conservation groups urge California to prepare for new shipping rules. Suzanne Potter reports.
Groups that fight for clean air around the nation's seaports are urging California officials to be ready for new international shipping rules coming this fall. In October, the International Maritime Organization is poised to adopt a net zero framework with a global carbon tax and clean fuel standard to facilitate the transition to clean fuels in cargo shipping. Davina Hurt with the nonprofit group Pacific Environment says California can't afford to sit on the sidelines.
These rules target the very same emissions California has already been working to cut at its ports and along its coast. So we need to make sure that our leadership is synchronized and they create a people-centered plan to guide this transition with intention and equity.
California is facing turbulent economic times, and advocates say some policymakers are slow-walking proposals to clean up air near the ports over concerns about costs. The American Lung Association ranks the L.A. Long Beach region the smoggiest in the nation, and they estimate that air pollution caused 265,000 premature deaths globally in 2020 alone. Hurt predicts cancer risk can be cut by 55% for people living near the ports once emissions from at-berth shipping are under control, with public health gains valued at $2.3 billion. Hurt maintains now is no time to retreat in the fight against climate change and air pollution.
People are concerned that the transition is too costly, but Pacific Environment wants to emphasize that the cost of inaction is already measured as lives lost and the missed economic opportunity that's coming ahead.
The international shipping rules, if adopted, would go into effect starting in 2027. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
In national news, judge restores D.C. control of police as D.C. sues to end Trump's takeover. KPFA's Dahlia Lozier reports.
D.C. Attorney General Brian Schwab has sued President Trump over his executive order asserting control over the D.C. Police Department. The updated order includes an attempt to install an official from the Trump administration as emergency police commissioner in the place of the current D.C. police chief, Pamela Smith. In a statement, Smith said, "In my nearly three decades in law enforcement, I have never seen a single government action that would cause a greater threat to law and order than this dangerous directive." Not long after the order was filed, District Court Judge Ana Reyes heard an emergency motion for a temporary injunction to block the order. Schwab spoke outside the courthouse Friday afternoon.
This morning, we filed a lawsuit here in the Federal District Court to enjoin the attempted hostile takeover of our police department.
Trump's order is part of a wider campaign to assert control over D.C., which began with him deploying around 800 National Guard troops to patrol city streets. Troops were given a broad mandate to clear homeless encampments, make arrests, and, quote, to do whatever the hell they want in curbing crime. Agents from the FBI, ICE, the Drug Enforcement Agency, and the Department of Homeland Security have also been dispatched to the streets of D.C. Federal agents have been causing chaos all over the city, pulling people over for broken taillights, arresting demonstrators, detaining immigrants, and conducting mass sweeps of homeless encampments, despite city health department notices allowing people to remain for several more days. Schwab touched on this after being pressed by a reporter.
Look, we know that the law under the Home Rule Act allows the federal government during a course of an emergency to request the services of MPD in furtherance of a federal purpose. And whether it's clearing encampments that are adjacent to or near federal land or that might interfere with federal employees, if it's enforcement of immigration laws that are under the federal, we will have to confront that as it comes. We have made very clear that we have laws in our city and that the services that MPD provides in furtherance of a request from the president, those services must comply with the law.
While Trump's attempted takeover of D.C. has likely been long in the making, the impetus for this recent push seems to be an incident in which a DOGE official was injured in a carjacking. A police report identified the victim as college student Edward Korstein, who is best known by the nickname Big Balls. Two 15-year-olds were arrested in connection with the incident and charged with unarmed carjacking. President Trump responded in part by calling for more juveniles to be charged in the adult justice system. The suit, filed by the city of D.C., argues that both President Trump's executive order on Monday federalizing the police department and a follow-up order by Pam Bondi, the U.S. Attorney General, far exceed the president's authority under the Home Rule Act of 1973, which granted D.C. its limited degree of self-government. The act says that the president may direct the mayor to provide police services for federal purposes and that the mayor shall provide them to him. On Monday, Trump sent a letter to the mayor saying he was directing her to, quote, submit to the president through the attorney general the services of the Metropolitan Police Force for federal purposes. Judge Reyes said that the Home Rule Act was originally drafted with a provision essentially allowing for what Trump is attempting, but that that provision was ultimately stricken from the act. Attorney General Schwab said that Trump's order is beyond the pale of what the Home Rule Act allows.
Even the President of the United States, even the Attorney General of the United States needs to comply with the law, and the Home Rule Charter and the Home Rule Act is very clear with respect to when the president can request limited services of MPD, limited by time, limited by emergency circumstances, and limited for federal purposes. And in all cases, those services must be requested to the mayor to be provided by the chief of police, not a hostile takeover of our police. And if it means standing up to the president, standing up to the attorney general to ensure that the laws of our country are followed, we will do that.
During the hearing, Judge Reyes made clear that she's inclined to block several aspects of the Trump administration's order. Instead of ruling right away, she encouraged the two sides to confer to see if they could agree on modifications that could hold for the next few days, diffusing the situation until the court can meet again. Lawyers from the two sides met, and what was meant to be a 15-minute break went on for hours. The District of Columbia and the federal government eventually agreed to restore control of the city's police department to the city's police chief instead of a Trump administration official. Schwab expressed his gratitude for the judge.
Local law enforcement has worked collaboratively with federal law enforcement from time immemorial. This is nothing new, and it's part of what the residents of the District of Columbia deserve is a cohesive law enforcement effort, MPD, with our federal enforcement partners. We don't need a hostile takeover from the federal government to do what we do every day.
The section of the Home Rule Act that gives the president some authority over the local police says that this authority terminates after the end of the declared emergency, an act of Congress, or a period of 30 days, whichever comes first. President Trump has said he will seek from Congress long-term extensions of his control over the D.C. police. Importantly, the court did not rule on a key aspect of the case, whether Trump can commandeer D.C. police officials to enforce immigration violations. That issue is likely to be resolved next week. For KPFA News, I'm Dahlia Lozier.
In National Native News, Antonia Gonzalez reads today's headlines.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Eastern Shoshone and Northern Arapaho students will have a crack at a new scholarship at the University of Wyoming. Wyoming Public Radio's Hannah Haberman has more.
UW is creating the Wind River Promise Fund. $250,000 will be available to tribal members to cover undergrad tuition costs and mandatory fees for full-time students. The idea has been going back and forth between tribal members, state legislators, and the university for years. UW trustee Paul Ulrich says the move is something to celebrate.
I think this is a long time coming, and I am absolutely thrilled to death that this motion has been made today.
An additional $2 million will be managed and invested like an endowment. Students must be enrolled tribal members to qualify. They also need to be Wyoming residents and graduate from a Wyoming high school. I'm Hannah Haberman.
Many clean energy initiatives across the country have been hit hard with federal funding freezes and cuts in recent months. But two villages in Alaska are considering a project that would harness the energy of ocean waves. Ayolna Niden with the Alaska Desk reports.
Waves gently hit the shores of Kachemak Bay as ravens croak above on a cloudy night in July. The small village of Port Graham is nested here at the southern tip of the Kenai Peninsula. the village may soon convert wave energy into electricity. Danielle Malchev is the first chief of Port Graham.
I have a lot of hope that this is going to be something great for our community.
Chugachmut is a consortium that serves native tribes, including Port Graham and its neighbor, Nunwalloc. The consortium announced it had partnered with an Australia-based company, Carnegie Clean Energy, in May. Carnegie has several wave energy projects across the world, but this would be the company's first commercial installment in the U.S. That's according to Louise Richardson, Carnegie's commercial analyst.
One thing at Carnegie that we hope our technology will be able to service in the future is remote communities and isolated communities that might not have access to other forms of renewable energy options.
Port Graham and Nunwalloc have no roads connecting them to the rest of the state. Energy costs there are high because the villages are at the edge of the grid and diesel for a backup generator comes on a barge. The electrical lines running from Homer are several decades old, don't have enough capacity, and are unreliable. Malchev says the village loses power several times a month in winter and once every few months in summer.
We have to use satellite phones if our power is out, which isn't very convenient when you're trying to relay and talk to doctors in the ER and you're dealing with a patient.
Malchev says more reliable electricity from wave energy could solve some of those issues. And ideally, the villages can sell any extra energy back to the grid and use that revenue on healthcare and education. The plan is to place a wave energy device offshore from Port Graham. Permitting, testing, and installation of the project might take close to 5 years. In Anchorage, I am Alona Naidin.
Over the weekend, in a social media post, the Gathering of Nations announced its final powwow. KJZZ's Gabriel Pietrazio has more.
In a Saturday social media post, the Gathering of Nations announced that next year's powwow will be the last dance. It's been an Albuquerque annual tradition beginning in 1983, drawing thousands of performers and spectators from across Turtle Island over the last four decades. On the event's website, organizers cited several factors beyond their control, making long-term planning and coordination challenging without specifically saying why. The 43rd Gathering of Nations will happen next April at the New Mexico State Fairgrounds. I'm Gabriel Pietrazio.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thanks for listening. Thanks to our engineer, Javier Rodriguez, and thanks to our reporters, Daniel Mintz, Christopher Martinez, Suzanne Potter, Dahlia Lozier, and Antonia Gonzalez. KMUD News is online, and you can find us on KMUD.org and now streaming on most podcast platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify, where you can download our stories and newscasts for offline listening during your rural commutes. You can also follow us on social media. If you have questions or suggestions, you can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send an email to news@kmud.org. Redwood Community Radio, Inc. is funded by Press Forward, the national movement to strengthen communities by reinvigorating local news. Learn more at pressforward.news. Reporting for KMUD, I'm Matt Cardos.